WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
While the books of some of America's greatest writers were being reviewed in the press, the writers' lives were under surveillance by the FBI. We now know that under J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI kept files on many writers suspected of somehow undermining the American way of life. The suspicious activities ranged from signing a petition to joining a guild or union, supporting a controversial cause, or allegedly having communistic tendencies. Sinclair Lewis, William Faulkner, Ernest Hemingway, Carl Sandburg, Dorothy Parker, Thomas Wolfe, Thornton Wilder, Lillian Hellman, and Tennessee Williams are just some of the writers the FBI kept files on. New York Times cultural correspondent Herbert Mittgang used the Freedom of Information Act to request the FBI files of these and other illustrious writers. Mittgang's findings are the subject of his new book, Dangerous Dossiers, Exposing the Secret War Against America's Greatest Authors. Mittgang is a former president of the Authors Guild and current president of the Authors League Fund. I asked him why he wanted to research the dossiers that had been kept on writers.
Well, I wanted to see if there was really a pattern to them, to see if it wasn't just some casual individual who was being checked because of what he had written, but rather because of a entire anti-intellectual feeling that existed in the FBI and in other agencies of the federal government. And it started to grow that way, beginning with Carl Sandburg and going on to a half dozen Nobel laureates in literature.
So what did you find? Were there patterns?
Well, there was a pattern because there was the Authors Guild, the Authors League, and the Dramatists Guild, and they were being watched by mail watches, by infiltrating their meetings, notices of their meetings, their documents, and these, of course, included thousands of members in both guilds. And this was a pattern that continued right from, the 1930s, right until into the 1960s.
Now, you are a former president of the Authors Guild. Why was it spied on? Was it considered a subversive organization?
Well, it's related to what these authors were writing for, and also some of their associations. Many major American writers were sympathetic during the Spanish Civil War to the Loyalist side. That immediately got them into trouble. I don't know if the FBI was keeping track of those on the pro-Franco side. At least I didn't discover any. But most of the great writers in the United States were on the Loyalist side. John Dos Passos, Dorothy Parker, Ernest Hemingway. They were all supporters of the Loyalists against Franco's fascist regime, which incidentally was supported by Nazi Germany and Mussolini's troops. And so this got them records. Then through Spanish war relief, after the defeat of the Loyalists, many of them lent their names to support refugees. And so this again got into their files. You have some of the Hemingway books, of course, like the Fifth Column play and book. These were considered subversive documents in the eyes of J. Edgar Hoover.
Are you especially outraged when writers are the targets of investigations?
Well, I'm not especially outraged because that's an interesting point. I've never felt that writers were any better than anybody else in the country. It happens that they are more visible. They are public performers in print, and therefore they are called upon more often to write supportive documents, occasionally to run for public office to testify before Congress. And no, I'm not outraged that authors are. I'm outraged that any Americans are subjected to having files on them because it's an invasion of their right of privacy under the Constitution.
Let me reintroduce you. My guest is Herbert Mittgang. He's a cultural correspondent for the New York Times and the author of the new book, Dangerous Dossiers, Exposing the Secret War Against America's Greatest Authors. Now, you had to do a lot of detective work to put this book together. Did you send for Freedom of Information Act files on the authors that you were curious about?
Yes. Thanks to these Freedom of Information and Privacy Act, which was a product came in the aftermath of the Church Committee hearings after Watergate in 1974, I was able to obtain the dossiers on, about 100 different authors, dramatists, even some musicians, composers, and artists. It started out, I had really no intention to write this book, to tell you the truth. It started out almost as a curiosity with one author, Carl Sandburg, whose letters I had edited at his request, the request of his family. And I was amazed that this icon of American poetry and history would have a file of some 100 pages. And then I said, well, if Carl Sandburg has a file, there must be other people who have files. And so I thought I'd start with the top, the half-dozen American Nobel laureates in literature. And so I wrote away for the files under the Freedom of Information Act on Sinclair Lewis, Pearl Buck, William Faulkner, Ernest Hemingway, John Steinbeck, and Thomas Mann, who became an American citizen in 1944. And much to my amazement, all of them had files. And then I started to broaden out from them and sometimes said, I'm going to play a little game with myself. I'm going to ask for files of the most outrageous tests of file keeping and record keeping, and that is people who I'm sure did not have a file, like E.B. White. Well, E.B. White had a file, which meant that they were looking after Stuart Little. I thought, what have they got against a little mouse?
Well, what did they have against E.B. White?
Well, he was listed in there because it was a very small file, but he was investigated, looked into as a possible subversive. And only he could have exposed this in writing. Actually, the files themselves, and his case was an example, were quite naive. E.B. White had actually attacked J. Edgar Hoover and record keeping in a number of cases, and I even used one of his little poems as an epigraph in the book from a poem called I Spy, and which went something like this: in darkling street they seek and hide, the game grows wild and drunken, they spy upon the other side, keep secrets in a pumpkin. Well, E.B. White could hardly have imagined that he was one of the people having a dossier, but it just went on and on.
Let's get back to some of the award-winning writers that you mentioned who had dossiers kept on them. William Faulkner, what did you find in his dossier?
Well, William Faulkner had supported some black man who had been convicted of a crime in the South without the proper, in his opinion, jury, and that this black man had been railroaded. And so Faulkner was one of the authors and other citizens who objected to this man's pursuit by the government. Well, this was enough to enable Faulkner to have a file kept on him. He also had other things in his file. He was a supporter also of some civil rights causes, just the normal things. And he was known, actually, in his writing as quite sympathetic for a gentleman from Mississippi to civil rights causes.
Can you tell us briefly what you found on John Steinbeck?
Well, Steinbeck was a specific case where a man's career was harmed because of what he actually wrote. The Grapes of Wrath, and right in the file on Hemingway, it says so. The Grapes of Wrath was...
Do you mean in the file on Steinbeck?
And the file on Steinbeck, excuse me. The file on Steinbeck specifically said that The Grapes of Wrath, his famous novel, which was really the cause of him receiving a Nobel Prize in Literature, was a subversive document, anti-American, and obviously pro-labor, and the people who were involved, the migratory workers, were not to be trusted, and anyone who wrote about them was not to be trusted. And there's actual criticism of Steinbeck's novel in his file by these unnamed literary critics in the FBI. At the same time, thereafter, that novel was written during the Depression, but around 1942, John Steinbeck was writing speeches voluntarily for President Roosevelt and others in the government. And he decided he wanted to get into uniform. And so he applied to be a second lieutenant in the Army, this very famous American writer. The FBI killed his attempt to get into uniform by calling him a subversive, and the Army then would not allow Steinbeck to get into uniform at the very time that he was writing speeches for President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
You know what I thought was interesting? You got the file on Aldous Huxley, who was the author of Brave New World, among other things. And you found out that Brave New World was subjected to cryptographic examination. Does that mean that they thought that there were secret messages encoded in Brave New World?
Yes, they thought that there was something in the book that was... sending messages to the enemy, when Huxley, of course, was really exposing the brave new world of an authoritarian regime rather than a democratic one.
Well, I want to talk with you more about some of the things that you found that the FBI had been finding on famous writers. But first, we're going to take a short break. My guest is New York Times cultural correspondent Herbert Mittgang. His new book is titled Dangerous Dossiers, Exposing the Secret War Against America's Greatest Authors. Basically, what he did was get the Freedom of Information Act FBI files on many of America's famous authors and find out what the FBI was keeping track of these writers for. So we'll talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Herbert Mittgang. We're discussing the subject of his new book, Dangerous Dossiers, about FBI files on famous writers. A couple of very funny things come up in your research. For instance, Nelson Algren, the former Chicago-based writer, had a romantic relationship with Simone de Beauvoir for a while, and that led to a very peculiar thing in his FBI file. Would you explain the story?
Yes, well, Nelson was a man with a great sense of humor. A great cynic, and now that he's being revived, a lot of people think a very great naturalistic writer in this century. Nelson did have an affair with Simone de Beauvoir. He told me that the lady exaggerated in her novel The Mandarins, but nevertheless, Algren could be very funny. Well, he was living in Gary, Indiana, and in the FBI file on him, it said Nelson Algren, and then it's had various aliases, among them Simon Beauvoir, Simone de Beauvoir, Simon de Beauvoir. And I thought, now, how did this happen? And so I went to the public library through a very nice librarian in Indiana, and sure enough, Nelson, as a gag, had used the name Simon de Beauvoir as his telephone listing. There was no Nelson Algren in the same directory. And so this threw the whole FBI into turmoil in his file. And I wanted to test the critics in the FBI, and so I wrote away to them after receiving this file and said, do you know why Nelson Algren used the alias Simon de Beauvoir? Didn't you know that this was his lady friend for several years? They never would give me an answer.
So you think that they weren't really in on other figures in the literary world?
I don't think so. That was not from their... They were rather unsophisticated in these raw files.
One other kind of funny sidebar that came up, the scholar and statesman John Kenneth Galbraith had a file that was kept on him, and I think as the story went, someone had said that he was doctrinaire, and the informant who was taking this down misunderstood and thought that they were calling him Dr. Ware. How did that show up in his file?
Well, again and again in his dossier, the FBI was in hot pursuit of this strange individual called Dr. Ware, W-A-R-E, who they thought was some sort of dangerous person. They were thrown into confusion for some 20 years looking for Dr. Ware. And as John Kenneth Galbraith told me, do you know, on me alone, the FBI must have expended hundreds of thousands of dollars just keeping records on me, having my mail watched, what I wrote watched, and looking for Dr. Ware, the non-existent Dr. Ware.
J. Edgar Hoover, during his reign over the FBI, was famous for keeping such files on Americans. When Hoover left the FBI, were files on writers like this still kept up?
Yes. Many of these files continue to this day. That is one of the major points I have made in the book, that once your name gets in a file, it does not get expunged. There's only one case that I know of where a writer had his file expunged after, about a 10-year effort in going through the courts. But once your name is in a file, it's just kept up.
Do you have reason to believe that the files are still being updated?
I think they are. Whenever your name pops into, especially with some activity which is not considered to the liking of the present government, I think the file is kept up or a new file started. And this all emerged in the last couple of months during the cases of there was an organization that was supporting the anti-government forces in El Salvador called CISPIS. Well, it turns out that many of these people were writers and they were people from other organizations, including organizations of nuns, some of whom, unfortunately, were killed, and some of their sisters were in there on nursing and other duties. These people, we discover, were being watched both in this country and whenever they traveled abroad. So, right, these revelations have come out right until 1988 and continued with FBI Director William Webster.
Now, it's interesting. President Reagan figures into your book in part under the name of Agent T-10.
Yes. President Reagan was president of the Screen Actors Guild in 1947 and very active in that guild. At that time, at the very same time that he was supposedly serving his fellow actors, he was a secret agent for the FBI spying on his fellow actors. I have that file, and in it he was called Agent T-10. That was his code name. Now, how did that come out while he was in the office, since he's not only in the White House, but he's also a living person? And most of the time, the files that I have concerned individuals who are no longer here. There was no objection to giving out his files, in my opinion, because I think that Attorney General Meese undoubtedly went through, it went all the way up to him, was rather proud of the fact that his president was also an FBI agent. Well, that's a matter of opinion and philosophy.
Could you get an understanding from the information you found what kind of informing that Ronald Reagan did while he was in the Screen Actors Guild?
Yes, he was looking at those members of his organization who may have been members of the Communist Party. And in fact, he then went to testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee. That's, I think, the first picture in my book showing Ronald Reagan wearing glasses, not contact lenses, and testifying before the House Un-American Activities Committee about communist cells in Washington. Incidentally, nobody ever proved that there was one Hollywood movie that followed a Communist Party line or advocated the Soviet system over the American. I've yet to see or hear of one film that was ever made that was a pro-Soviet, anti-American film.
Now, your book, Dangerous Dossiers, is based largely on information you got through the Freedom of Information Act, and this is the act that enables you to get FBI files, you know, and to make open that information. Is it hard to get that information from the FBI? What do you have to do?
Well, I must say that I found the FBI Freedom of Information Act section very cooperative and courteous, and I both in my telephone communications with them and in writing to them. I think they were trying to uphold a law which they had to, which had been approved by Congress and the president. I found the FBI rather cooperative. However, I found many of the pages either withheld in their entirety or heavily censored. And this was a judgment call on the part of those who were censoring it. I think they were trying to uphold the law. However, I did notice during the Reagan administration in the last couple of years, and I started this nearly 5 years ago, in the last 2 years, the procedures have been tightened up so that it's getting to be a little more difficult and a little longer to get these files. There were other agencies, other intelligence agencies, who were far less cooperative than the FBI, and that was the CIA and especially the State Department Intelligence Bureau and the intelligence branches of the three branches of the armed forces. All of them were far less cooperative, strangely enough, than the FBI. The FBI centralized these documents from the other agencies, and so, in a sense, they cannot be condemned for lacking information. Because some of the information that was held from me came from other intelligence agencies.
While you were going through all this trouble of getting the files on other writers, did you get one on yourself?
Well, I asked that very question of E.L. Doctorow, and he said he's written a way for it, for his file, and he'd like to be in the great company of these half-dozen Nobel laureates. I'm curious. I have written a way for my own. I'm waiting to hear.
So you don't know if there is one on you or not?
I wouldn't be surprised if there is. As I say, I'm not in the class of Das Passos and Thomas Wolfe and Dashiell Hammett and A.J. Liebling and Nelson Algren and Maxwell Anderson and all the playwrights in the book, Thornton Wilder. All of them had files. When I asked Ed Doctorow that, he says it's sort of an honors list. It's like being on Nixon's hit list. I've spoken to a few people who were off it who were rather offended.
I bet that one of the outcomes of your book is that a lot of writers are asking you to help them get their Freedom of Information Act files. Is that happening?
Well, that's good. That's absolutely true, and I've heard from a number of them. And I said it's easier than you think, even though there's a much longer wait now. You have to write away under the Freedom of Information Act and give a little basic information about where you were born and what you are doing, and that you have some legitimate purpose in finding out about yourself. You don't have to give too many details, and take a chance at it.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Herbert Mittgang. He writes about books and writers for the New York Times. His new book is titled Dangerous Dossiers, Exposing the Secret War Against America's Greatest Authors. It's published by Donald Fine. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.